Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
All hogs and pigs is at 75.1 million head, up 0.3% from previous year.
USDA releasing their quarterly hogs and pigs report. Travis Averill, chief of USDA's livestock brand.
Breeding hogs is at 5,979,000 head, a decrease of 0.5% from 2024. The market hogs is at 69.2 million head, up 0.4% from last year. The top five states are listed in the bottom left-hand corner. Iowa's number one, unchanged from previous year. Minnesota's following number two. They're down 1% from 2024. North Carolina's in third. They're up 3% from previous year. Illinois is unchanged. And Indiana wraps up the top five, up 1% from previous year.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We do have this big, beautiful bill that's moving its way through now the Senate. It's moved its way through the House. There are some key provisions that industry has been working on for well over 3 to 4 years now to make our farm safety net essentially just more relevant for the times and cost of doing business.
Cody Besant is CEO, Plains Cotton Growers.
Our previous safety net that we've been operating underneath, well, is a good format. Unfortunately, it just doesn't meet the current cost of doing business. And so the improvements that have been at least incorporated in the original House mark that G.T. Thompson was able to shepherd, and now on the Senate side with Senator John Bozeman and the budget reconciliation process, makes increases to our reference price to a more nominal level for Title I. It also makes improvements to the marketing assistance loan that we rely pretty heavily on as a cotton industry, as well as making some significant increases and enhancements to the crop insurance program for risk management tools for producers and others to utilize for better risk management to help preserve the agriculture industry in a time of peril and need, especially as we continue to experience challenges with Mother Nature, be it hurricanes or, in our case, droughts or hailstorms, other perils that we continue to experience. And the goal ultimately is to continue to implement these final stages of our ad hoc programs that we've seen. So the economic assistance program that's being continued to play out through the middle of August, through disaster-related assistance for the 23-24 crop year, to shore all of that up, finalize that out, and then have these true enhancements for a long-term farm safety net. So the goal would be to not have the need or necessity for ad hoc programs like we've had to depend upon absent a farm bill being enacted. And so there's a lot of momentum going forward with it. We'll continue to watch and monitor how the reconciliation process plays out. While there is some discussions going on with the parliamentarian on rules and what can actually be made germane and held out going through the process, I do feel very good, at least as far as the true farm bill provisions for actual producers and the farm safety net in general are in very good shape at this point. So, but stay tuned. Industry has been very aggressive and very strategic in how we do this, as well as leaning into the support of the administration, but they have been very good to work with as well. And trying to shepherd this process to its final stage and implement it for the new crop year.
But as that reconciliation bill takes center stage, ag groups worrying the farm bill being pushed aside. Farm Bureau leaders say the delay comes at a time when producers urgently need support. They point to falling crop prices, disease pressure, and drought. Some lawmakers warn the reconciliation package could actually complicate farm bill talks down the road. And China approving 23 new U.S. pork plants for export. National Pork Producers Council says deal brings more certainty to the market. Last year, U.S. pork exports to China topped $1 billion. Now at home, producers watching the spread of New World screwworm, USDA's fly control plan is underway, but Mexico warns current efforts may fall short. And USDA data shows dairy farmers received nearly 60% of what consumers paid for butter last year. At the same time, American Butter Institute calling on FDA to crack down on plant-based spreads using the butter label. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
And Washington promises to tackle waste, fraud, and abuse that become like New Year's resolution.
Chairman of the House Budget Committee, Jody Arrington, at a recent hearing on rooting out waste and fraud.
We all make promises to address it. We include them in all of our budgets, but we rarely, if ever, execute on them. So we proclaim them loudly, but quietly abandon them. And that's both parties. Both parties are guilty of that. And the cost of this inaction, though, is quite staggering. One major driver of this problem is what the Government Accountability Office categorizes as improper payments that were wrongly made or were made in the wrong amount. Last year alone, the GAO identified $31 billion in Medicaid improper payments. $31 billion is nearly the state budget of Arkansas, Delaware, Idaho, Vermont, New Hampshire, and South Dakota combined. And those are partial audits. The last full audits were significantly higher. The only two last full audits, I think it was 19 and 20, were significantly higher, almost 30 cents on the dollar improperly paid. And Medicaid improper payments are often the result of costly combination of lax oversight and blatant fraud, unverified documents, false income claims, and missing household information that never gets flagged, let alone fixed. In the Supplemental Nutrition Program, or SNAP, which provides food assistance to nearly 42 million people, GAO identified $10.5 billion in proper payments for an error rate of 11.7%. I think that's doubled over the last few years. In SNAP, state governments frequently fail to check for basic eligibility criteria, whether it's citizenship, employment, finances, or even someone's identity. When the system fails to prevent fraud because of lack of accountability or the right incentives, the fraudsters gladly seize on that vulnerability. In Baltimore, a dozen store owners stole $16 million by trafficking SNAP benefits through fake retail transactions. Another example, in New York, a government worker used SNAP benefits to buy energy drinks and resell them to corner stores, pocketing almost $2 million. In Florida, a couple used nearly 700 stolen identities to obtain SNAP cards and then swap them for cash at a corrupt retailer. And the list goes on and on. These are not isolated incidents. They are symptoms of a system with inadequate guardrails and vulnerabilities that invite fraudsters to siphon funds away from those that the program was intended to serve. Through the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, this committee, the full House, and hopefully soon the Senate, have advanced reforms to restore accountability and ensure our entitlements actually serve the people they were intended to. Vulnerable Americans, not fraudsters, not schemers, and not people in this country illegally. By ensuring illegal immigrants, and importantly, the bill addresses some of the fiscal mismanagement that I just mentioned. One, ensuring illegal immigrants don't benefit from taxpayer-funded social services so that the safety nets are there into the future for our most vulnerable American citizens. Two, preserving and strengthening Medicaid by enhancing enrollment verification and ensuring only those who are legally eligible receive the benefits. Three, reining in state financing gimmicks like provider tax schemes meant to siphon away federal Medicaid dollars, which actually will drive up premiums and crowd out Medicare patients as we're paying to reimburse Medicaid patients at commercial rates. And as I mentioned to Brian and some of the panelists earlier, even in our One Big Beautiful Bill, we could do more, and I hope and encourage the Senate to do more in that regard. And capping, by the way, President Biden, President Obama called these things scams. This is a bipartisan opportunity to go big for the taxpayer and the folks that are counting on these programs.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
My name is Nicole Galassi, and I currently serve as a managing director for the Hawaii Cattlemen's Council, a statewide organization supporting ranchers who steward 750,000 acres, or nearly 20% of Hawaii's total landmass.
Galassi testifying recently before a House Ag Subcommittee on Conservation.
HCC is an affiliate of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, which is the nation's largest and oldest national trade association representing the U.S. cattle industry and represents over a 250,000 cattle producers. Cattle producers own and manage considerably more land than any other segment of U.S. agriculture or any other U.S. industry for that matter. America's cattle producers collectively manage over 650 million acres, nearly one-third of our nation's continental landmass. Some of the biggest challenges and threats to our industry come from the loss or conversion of our natural resources. In Hawaii, like many other states, we face a decline in pasture lands. A decline in pasture inevitably leads to a decline in agricultural production, which weakens food security. Our goal is to keep grasslands green. Since our livelihood is made on the land, resource stewardship not only makes good environmental sense, it is economically fundamental. Maintaining robust voluntary conservation programs must remain a top priority for both USDA and this committee. Accomplishing this goal is impossible without the flexibility and attention to locally led decision making. Cattle producers take pride in our efforts to improve the land and are always looking for partnership opportunities. I urge the committee to promote initiatives in the Farm Bill that allow NRCS programs to foster innovative and common sense land management. Additionally, mandates that stifle implementation or a one-size-fits-all approach simply does not work in the cattle industry. These efforts to standardize programs limit producers' ability to utilize the unique practices that help their individual operations thrive. The EQIP program is a popular funding source for Hawaii cattle producers. In one example, a Hawaii rancher utilized EQIP for cross-fencing to improve his rotational grazing, allowing him to double his herd size while improving soil health. For this producer and others, accessing technical assistance is crucial to success. NRCS staff provide guidance to maximize both productivity and sustainability. And access to EQIP and conservation technical assistance improves soil health, controls erosion, and ensures improved water quality. It's clear through my experience with NRC and FSA that lack of funding is not our primary roadblock. Especially when it comes to EQIP, the 50% livestock carve-out is effective in ensuring that necessary monies are available. Access to technical assistance and inefficient funding distribution are the most significant hurdles to producer success. While these hurdles were acknowledged in the 2018 Farm Bill, few policies actually increase functionality. NRCS was designed to function as a locally led federal agency. While this seems counterintuitive, its structure has proven invaluable for farmers and ranchers who seek specialized solutions for local conservation challenges. Local populations hold a deep understanding of their land, their ecosystems, and their unique challenges. These stakeholders know better than anyone else where to dedicate resources to address urgent and high-impact concerns. This insight allows conservation projects to be tailored to the specific needs of the area, reducing costly missteps often seen when national programs are forced on states or counties. In short, locally led conservation combines the right knowledge, community buy-in, and targeted solutions to efficiently stretch every dollar spent. As policymakers consider the sustainability of the U.S. agricultural industry, environmental sustainability is only one leg of a three-legged stool. Economic prosperity, social awareness, and voluntary conservation go hand in hand, and we're always looking for conservation opportunities that will have tangible benefits for the environment and to help improve our ranching lands.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
All hogs and pigs is at 75.1 million head, up 0.3% from previous year.
Travis Averill is chief of USDA's NASS Livestock Branch on the quarterly hogs and pigs report.
Less than 50 pounds is at 21.5 million head, up 1.2% from 2024. The 50 to 119-pound weight group is at 19.4 million head, an increase of 0.1% from previous year. The 120 to 179-pound weight group is at 15.3 million head, up 0.5% from last year. As you can see, the only weight group that is down year over year is 180 and over at 12.9 million, down 0.6% from 2024.
For sows farrowing?
For March to May of 2025 is at 2,907,000 head. That is down 13,000 head from previous year. In the March hogs and pigs report, NASS had the same quarter second intentions at 2,913,000, whereas the first intentions in December hogs and pigs report for the same quarter was at 2,953,000 head. So with the second intentions for June to August 2025, sows farrowing is at 2,974,000, down 0.4% from prior year's actual farrowings. In the March hogs and pigs report, the same quarter with first intentions for June to August 2025 was at 2,961,000. So this is the first quarter to have the first intentions for September to November 2025. Sows farrowing is at 2,946,000. That is up 21,000 from previous year's actual farrowings. So at the bottom is the U.S. quarterly sows farrow chart since 2016. sows farrowed from March to May are the green squares. The second intentions for June to August 2025 is the orange diamond. And the purple triangle represents the first intentions for September to November. The crop weaned from March to May of 2025 is at 33,171,000 head, an increase of 1.3% from previous years. Its per litter weaned is at 11.75, up from the rate of 11.56 from last year, and also up a tenth of a pig from previous quarter's litter rate. The March to May is a record high for this quarter. As you can see on the chart, the U.S. quarterly pigs per litter from 2016 to present shows the pigs per litter over time and how it has continued to show efficiencies per sow.
And Canadian imports.
Canadian feeder pigs and slaughter hogs imported for the second quarter of 2025 accounted for 1,682,000 head compared to 1,754,000 in 2024. This is a decrease of 4.1% from 2024. The Canadian quarter import values are above the respective quarters. Feeder pigs as a percentage of the imports are light blue. Of the imports from Canada, 76% are feeder pigs, or 1,278,000 head, up 2.4% compared to prior year's total of 1,250,000. Where slaughter hogs as a percentage of the imports are illustrated with the darker blue, slaughter hogs accounted for 24% of the Canadian imports, or 403,000 in 2025, down 20% from last year's total of 504,000.
And again, total number of hogs under contract owned by operations with over 5,000 head, but raised by contractees, accounting for 53% of the total. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Here is the state of play.
Brendan Boyle is a representative from Pennsylvania, ranking member of the House Budget Committee at a recent hearing on rooting out waste and fraud.
According to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, the Republican bill, the big, beautiful bill for billionaires, will throw 16 million Americans off their health care. That is a fact. It will also deny nutrition assistance to another 4.5 million Americans. Why? In furtherance of more than $5 trillion worth of tax cuts, almost all of which go to the top 1% of Americans. In fact, this tax cut will end up being an increase for the bottom third of Americans when you look at the bill in its totality. And that's quite different from the Reagan tax cuts of 81, or the George W. Bush tax cuts of 2001 or 2003, or even the original TCJA from 8 years ago. The Joint Committee on Taxation found that if this Republican big bill were to become law, every household making under $55,000 a year would be poorer as a result of this legislation. So the facts remain, under this legislation, the poor will get poorer, the rich will get richer, and the middle class will be falling further behind. But that's not all. The bill also dramatically increases both our deficit and our national debt. On a dynamic basis, the bill increases deficits by $3.4 trillion. So for all the talk that we're hearing about deficit and debt, this bill takes a bad situation and makes it far worse. Now, as we spent a lot of time together in the middle of the night on the House floor some weeks ago, I noticed that you tended to hear a couple of responses from my Republican friends to these facts. One was to simply just deny the Congressional Budget Office's analysis altogether. Here's the problem. It's not just the official scorekeepers, CBO. It's the Joint Committee on Taxation. It is left-leaning groups. It is right-leaning groups. It is nonpartisan groups, all finding the same thing. This dramatically increases deficit and debt and will lose the millions of Americans, lead to millions of Americans losing their health care. Their second argument is, okay, maybe millions will lose their health care, but they're all illegals anyway, so it doesn't matter. Not true. Again, the CBO has verified these are almost all entirely people here legally or U.S. citizens. And then that brings us to the last point, which apparently is the subject of our hearing today. Well, it's all really just waste and fraud. Now, look, I want to be clear. When it comes to rooting out waste and fraud, this absolutely should be bipartisan. As someone who believes that government can be a force for good in people's lives, I'm offended by the idea of anyone who would rip off the system. Some of the examples that the chairman just referenced were egregious. Those people, frankly, broke the law and should be prosecuted fully. So there is no defense on this side of the aisle for any actual instances of waste and fraud and, frankly, criminality. But the real fraud here is to pretend that 16 million Americans who are going to lose their health care are all just defrauding the system. That doesn't pass the smell test. No rational person recognizes that millions and millions of Americans are going to lose their health care, but they're all somehow fraudsters. What an actually insulting perception one must have of the American people. Studies continue to show the hardest working people on earth, the most efficient workforce, the American people.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Our farmers are the natural caretakers and stewards of our land.
Angie Craig of Minnesota is the ranking member of the House Ag Committee. She had opening statements recently for a subcommittee on conservation research and biotech.
USDA's conservation programs help continue that legacy while diversifying farm income streams and helping farmers' bottom line. Conservation is essential to keeping our farm and forest lands working for generations to come. Over the last decade, my state, Minnesota, has received over $875 million from Natural Resources Conservation Service programs to help producers with everything from planting cover crops and pollinator habitat to implementing reduced tillage and manure management. For example, in my district in Rice County, conservation champions like John and Debbie Becker have enrolled land in the Conservation Reserve Program to protect the country's only self-sustaining trout stream. And more recently, they've used the Environmental Quality Incentives Program to fund planting cover crops. Of course, that's the county's only, not the country's only. And though the Conservation Stewardship Program, Mike and Kay Pedersen have added critical area plantings of native prairie on highly erodible end rows where erosion occurred year after year. These programs are popular because they work. Moving forward, there are some significant issues I believe we must address to get more conservation on the ground. First, I would be remiss not to mention my significant concern with the current administration's hollowing out of NRCS. In Minnesota alone, we've lost more than 70 dedicated NRCS employees. Without dedicated and qualified staff working from farmer service centers in rural America, these programs cannot succeed. Yet the president's budget recommends completely zeroing out conservation technical assistance, further jeopardizing our ability to implement extremely popular farm bill conservation programs like EQIP and CSP. This will hurt farmers, not help them. Second, NRCS programs remain oversubscribed. We've got to protect the remaining Inflation Reduction Act conservation funding by rolling it into the Farm Bill baseline. And we should do it in a manner that preserves the original intent of the investment and without busting up the Farm Bill coalition. We must make sure that money stays in the voluntary, incentive-based conservation programs that our farmers rely on. The investments we made in conservation programs through the IRA might be a once-in-a-lifetime, and we shouldn't give up those gains. I'm glad the majority has recognized the importance and success of the IRA and joined us in trying to get this across the finish line. Lastly, it's been too long since we've reauthorized a full 5-year farm bill. There are common sense, bipartisan changes that everyone agrees need to be made. I look forward to working with my colleagues, our witnesses, and the broader conservation community to protect and improve the Farm Bill's conservation programs. We have a tremendous opportunity to streamline program delivery, increase incentives for producer participation, and preserve farm, ranch, and forest lands for current farmers and our children, and especially for those of us who have them, our grandchildren.
Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Recognizing specific supporters of rural home ownership. The intent behind this week's ceremony at USDA headquarters in Washington, D.C. for the Rural Development National Lender of the Year Awards.
We join together to make home ownership possibility for the rural community. Those loans serviced by one of the lenders that won our award.
RD Single Family Housing Guaranteed Loan Program Executive Director Ingrid Ripley says awards were given in several categories to individual lenders and lending companies for their work in advancing rural home ownership. Recipients include Harry Rodriguez of HR Mortgage in Puerto Rico and Chris Garrett of American Financial Resources of New Jersey.
I don't think there's a product out there that really helps out the borrower as much as the USDA loan program.
We've leveraged USDA's one-time closed construction product to help those consumers who are unable to find an existing home, help them build a new one.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.